Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. When it comes to sustainable development, one of the first notions to hit the trash can is that of waste. According to German ecologist Dr. Peter Heck, waste is really a resource waiting to be put to use. The Alberta Research Council recently brought Dr. Heck to Edmonton to share his vision for applied materials flow management and what this means for Alberta's new bioeconomy. And Tech Edmonton has a new CEO, Dr. David Cox. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. In the world of Dr. Peter Heck, there's no such thing as waste. He believes it's possible to build an environmentally sustainable economy, recovering the energy from materials we now regard as waste. And he has an institute in Germany dedicated to proving just that. It's called the Institute of Applied Materials Flow Management. The Alberta Research Council recently brought Dr. Heck to Canada to speak to people here about his ideas and his experiences. One of the organizers of this event was Dean Richardson, the new Ventures Manager for Engineered Products and Services at the Alberta Research Council.
Well, the Alberta Research Council has embarked on a broad-ranging investigation of a bunch of activities related to sustainable development. We've had sustainable activities in a number of our business units across council for many years, but we've recently decided it's time to try and build some critical mass and focus these efforts. And in the course of doing a bunch of investigation, we came across the Institute for Applied Material Flow Studies and associated with the University of Trier's in Germany, and was very taken with the very practical, pragmatic approach of how they engage in sustainable development. And it seemed a natural for us to explore. We're a very applied research and development organization, and Dr. Heck's group is a very applied application group. And so there was a natural fit. Germany is recognized as a world leader in environmental technology, sustainable development, and so on. There just seemed to be a nice mesh. I attended a presentation Dr. Heck gave in Calgary some months back, and that led to an invitation to come to our facility to share his knowledge and his insight with the folks of interest in our circle.
Well, when you look, for example, at the IMIS plant out at Vegreville that the Alberta Research Council was very heavily involved in, what sort of a match or a fit do you see between what Dr. Heck has been talking about in terms of materials flow and what we're already doing here?
I think probably the fundamental concept is waste as food is probably as simple a way to put it as any, and it captures the essence of seeing waste as a resource instead of as a problem. And so when you phrase or establish the problem that way, or the challenge that way, then the solutions become more evident. And Dr. Heck's group has been heavily involved in biofuel, biogas type energy generation. That's a central element in a lot of their work, and it's a natural dovetail with our activity. And the institute there has been involved in the initiatives that are rolling out in a number of German municipalities, and so obviously there's a practical experience that is useful from our perspective as well, as we consider the same issues with rolling out our technology.
When you look what's happening in the energy sector, and particularly in Fort McMurray with the oil sands, is there any chance that any of this is going to make any headway in Alberta?
Well, I would certainly hope so. One of the interesting insights is that if we can use our native resources in terms of fuels, crops, and other things to meet the energy loads of some of our communities and so on, that means we're not attracting a resource that we're using to earn export dollars right now. And so, you can think of it from a substitution perspective in that by using clean technology internally, we have more of the resource to export to the rest of the world, and obviously there's a financial gain to be made from doing that. The other issue, of course, is that, the resource is finite, and there's lots of debate over how many years it's going to last. It's going to last a long time, I think. We recognize that, but at the same time, we need to understand and realize that there is alternative ways to meet our standard of living requirements, and it's appropriate to be thinking about those now, even though there's lots of we've got lots of resources in the ground, but they're also saleable resources with the market value. So we can be making returns from our resource assets now, but we also have the opportunity to position ourselves for the next generation and build on some of the strength and roll out some of the applicability. And it's also, there's a real complementarity because we are an agricultural province as well as an oil and gas province. A lot of these resources are biomass derived. The resources that are used as these energy approaches that are sustainably generated, and so to me, there's some natural opportunities for rejuvenation of the family farm, for the issues that are important to our rural citizens in Alberta. So to me, there's a number of areas where it overlaps. We've got the financial resources, the knowledge and intellectual capacity to take advantage of it, and we can do that at the same time as we proceed intelligently to develop our fossil fuel resources. And so to me, I don't see a dichotomy. I think there's a way to intelligently move forward on both fronts.
Thank you very much, Dean.
Oh, my pleasure, Cheryl. Nice talking with you again.
That was Dean Richardson, Manager of New Ventures for Engineered Products and Services at the Alberta Research Council. Dr. Peter Heck is head of the Institute for Applied Material Flow Management at the Environmental Campus of Trier University in Birkenfeld, Germany.
The institute is quite young. It's 5 years old, and it's based on the idea of interdisciplinary education and of making systems more efficient and using business aspects to show this efficiency. This is a philosophy on our campus, and because of this philosophy, we found the institute to put it into practical work, into consultancy work for communities, companies, governments. And that's how IFRS started, and today IFRS is with 40 people, and we have an annual turnover of more than €1 million for consultancy business. That's a lot. And we're only doing sustainable development things. We are not working for conventional energy suppliers or fossil or mineral industry companies. We're working for renewable energy or saving energy or sustainable business.
Now, how is it actually going to work? In your presentation today, you talked a lot about energy, the potential energy and biomass, and harnessing our biomass. How does it work in your system, in your view of the world?
In our system, which basically is Germany, but also Europe, and the system is growing every day. We have a lot of requests from Asia, from Turkey, from Africa. It's working like people are paying a lot of money for resources and also paying a lot of money to get rid of part of the resource, and they call it waste. And we look at this resource, this material flow of the resource in the system, and make easy proposals to improve this flow of materials. And then we say how much money they can save changing the material flow a little bit. And then in 90% of the cases, it turns out to be a business approach. The problem we have is that we have to invest a lot of money to do the change of the material flow. Then the system will be much more profitable and everybody will have a win effect. But in the beginning, we have to invest more money. And so we have to talk to people who have the money, like banks or private investment guys. And we must convince them that the system efficiency is a business to them. And this information is a very high transaction task. So we have a lot of cost in the beginning to analyze the system and then convince people to invest in a new system, in a change management, actually.
Now, I understand that you've actually changed your own vehicle over, so that runs off canola oil. How did you do that?
Oh, there's a booming business in Germany right now. People who change diesel engines so that they are fit for pure blend oil. And I did this because we are propagating it all over the place with the farmers and the logistic companies to turn to plant oil, because plant oil is much more energy efficient than biodiesel or ethanol or whatever. And we asked many companies whether they're interested in changing my engine, because I'm a very good multiplicator for this. And we found one who was willing to change my engine. I have a very small engine. I have a very energy-saving car, actually. So for me, it does not make so much sense like for other guys to have energy big energy-consuming engines. So I have a small engine. And we found one who changed it. I paid €1,800. And according to my own personal business plan, I will have gained back this money after 18 months, and then I have a net saving of something like €0.40 per liter for the next 5 or 6 years, which I'm running this car.
Now, you also have set up zero-emission villages. What's happening in these zero-emission villages?
Yeah, zero-emission villages is a marketing term which we're using to get city mayors interested in improving their system with regard to energy supply. Zero-emission is a term coming from the industry, actually. This is like the zero-failure conceptions to motivate the people to work harder or work on high-quality standards. And this is what we introduced to a village of about 20,000 people in Germany. They won a lot of prizes with this. And we showed the city mayor and all the local government people and the citizens that have a lot of potentials for reducing CO2 emissions and creating jobs and transferring technology in their village. So they are starting to invest in solar thermal units, in pellet ovens, in photovoltaic cells, in wind energy, in district heating systems based on wood chip cogeneration technology. So a whole bunch of things, and everybody is knowledgeable about this. You know, so they are no longer the stupid consumers of something suffering from high energy prices. They are their own energy producers. The intelligent people knowing about prices, knowing about potentials. And that's what Zero Emission Village makes out of people. Intelligent learning elements of a progressive system.
Now, you have something going for you in Germany in that you have a new regulation that says things just simply can't go to landfill.
Yeah.
So what has that meant for you?
First of all, it meant that I was proud of my politicians. This is not often the case. That they actually got a very, very nice legislation just forcing the public systems to be more creative with regard to waste. So actually consider waste to be a resource. And as this happened last year, there were mushrooming of ideas to treat waste as a resource, recycling ideas, avoiding ideas. So for us, it was just like a huge market opening from one day to the other. Huh? And of course, as we have it in Germany, we can use it all over the world. You can show the other politicians, other government people, look, Germany did this step. And they did it because of economic reasons, because landfilling is the most expensive way to treat waste, if you're honest with your costs. And that's our experience after 30 years waste management. And this is what we are transferring now to all other countries and say, don't do it. You will only suffer economically, environmentally anyways, and socially also.
Well, one of the things that you also said in your presentation, you focused a lot on the social structures that have to be put into place. And you said that what your ideas are doing is really you're talking about the democratization of energy. Explain that a bit more.
You know, after the World War in Europe, I think it was a point of time where everywhere in the world systems were redesigned. We set up huge energy supply structures because we were short of energy and they were just fueling the economy and we were just using energy until we got enough structure, enough of education to start to think about the system. Now, we realized that we need to redesign this system, and we have to bring more intelligence to the system. This means we are no longer just consumers. We are energy use avoiders. We are energy generators. We are energy networkers. And this is what's happening in Germany right now. Every year, about 1% of the total energy supply is giving to the hands of the people. So because of the renewable energy law, which is a fantastic law to my opinion, which forces the big utilities to accept all electricity which is produced by private people like me, forces them to buy it. And on a good business base, so people are starting to produce their own energy and they have to buy it. And that's why the system is changing from a monopoly system to a more decentralized and democratic system. Like I mentioned, we have 4,000 biogas plants now in Germany. It will be 10,000 in 2010. This means we have 4,000 to 10,000 new small companies producing energy on a sustainable base, involving local people, involving local resources, being CO2 neutral, and making business, making money. And this is like a mirror to all the big companies ruining our world, creating no more jobs and being not sustainable. And they have to live with this mirror. And it's getting more and more difficult for them to justify what they are doing. And this is what I like to have these different mirrors to show other people, look, it's possible the other way, and it's adding more value to the people, to society, to the environment. So why are we not talking about involving you in this change instead of always confronting each other?
Well, you've been here. You've had a chance to go look at some of the projects that are happening in the Edmonton area, the IMUS plant out at Vegreville and the Waste Management Center here. What's your assessment of where we're at?
I have a very positive assessment, actually, because the biogas planning in Vegreville is very nicely done. They have a problem use of something like 500 kilowatt hours heat. So we talked about how to organize this, and I told them in a material flow management idea we would try to attract another company using the heat, and this would be a strategy for us, for a whole state, to put biogas plants where there is a 100% heat use, so not to waste anything and to improve the business aspect. And I think we agreed on this. The waste management center is a very nice thing, especially involving the universities. What we talked about, or what I would like to see, is to use the energy content of the organic material. I think sooner or later this will happen. It must happen. And with regard to the overall situation, of course, for me it's interesting to be in a state where people think they are awash with energy. And though energy is cheap and everybody thinks they have enough, but even there, I think it makes sense to use your own renewable energy potentials from the farmers or whatever and sell to the world your organic, inorganic potentials, because you cannot sell your organic potential. They are very sensitive to transport. So if you substitute your own fossil energy use, you can sell more energy abroad and can get the money from other countries who need your oil. So even having a lot of oil does not mean you should not use your biomass. Yeah? But this seems to be the perception here, more or less. So this is something I think I would like to discuss more with people in this state, why they don't use the lot of money they're generating from fossils to invest in sustainable structures. This will be a very nice thing for the future. After 40, 50 years, the oil is gone in Alberta. You have a totally renewable energy structure, organized and operated by the people in Alberta, and they will have already taken care of the future. This would be great.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you very much, too.
That was Dr. Peter Heck, head of the Institute for Applied Material Flow Management in Birkenfeld, Germany. I also spoke with Dean Richardson of the Alberta Research Council. With barely 2 years under its belt, Tech Edmonton is quickly becoming a strong force in the technology innovation community of not just Edmonton, but the whole province. Tech Edmonton is a joint venture between the University of Alberta and the Edmonton Economic Development Corporation. It helps with the commercialization of new technologies. The man in charge is also new to Tech Edmonton. Dr. David Cox joined the organization on April 1st.
I'm settling in nicely. You know, I come from 14 years in the private sector, biotech company, CEO, and mostly small companies, often struggling companies. And I've got to tell you, it's really good to have the safety and security and the strength of two powerful institutions at my shoulder. That's the University of Alberta and the City of Edmonton. And at the same time, I get to play in the startup sandbox, right? So I get to hang out with startup CEOs and groovy technology and stuff like that. So it's for me, it's the best of both worlds.
What is it that you think you have to offer to these new startup companies that are coming along?
Well, I think that, you know, with all due modesty, I have a fairly diverse background. I've spent time as a professor in a university back in the UK, admittedly. So I understand the university, the further education, higher education environment. I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but I certainly understand it and I've experienced it at all kinds of levels. I was a department head or chairman, as they call them here. So I understand university administration and politics, to be frank. I've also spent time in the Alberta Research Council, which is at the cusp of private industry and government. And as I said earlier on, many years in the private sector, including running a publicly traded company. I think I have a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience. I understand the two worlds, the world of business and the world of higher education. And I think that I'm in a unique position to bring some of that perspective to the benefit of Tech Edmonton and the benefit of the university and the city of Edmonton.
So how is that manifesting itself? What have you got on your plate right now?
Well, Tech Edmonton, as your listeners probably aren't aware, is unique in North America. It is the only technology transfer type of organization which is a legal joint venture between the city and the university. And as such, we're uniquely positioned to do things that other comparable organizations are not able to do. The driving imperative for Tech Edmonton is to capture more of the value of research that's done primarily at the university here, but also other institutes of higher education, and even the citizens of the region, to capture the value for the region. That is not common for a tech transfer organization. Typically, they're set up to transfer knowledge to industry wherever the receptor happens to be. It needn't be in the city of Edmonton, it needn't be in the province of Alberta, it needn't be in the country, as long as the technology is licensed and some revenue comes back to university. We're more of an economic diversification mandate. So what we're doing that's transformative are several things. First of all, we want to reach deeper into the university and encourage the faculty, where appropriate, to contemplate the creation of new companies based around their research. Typically, tech transfer organizations, including this one originally, would patiently wait for the professors to come to the door and say, I have an idea. And then we would see what we could do. I want to reach into the faculty. I want to market to the faculty. I want to get in front of the faculty and show them what is possible. Absolutely no intention of coercing or bullying anybody into doing something they don't want to do, but I want them to know what we can bring to the table, what our value proposition is, and what is possible for them, for their faculty, and for the university, and, of course, for society. So, first of all, I'm reaching in. And secondly, prerogative is to, wherever possible, look at every opportunity and say, is there a business here? Can we make a business here? And if we can, if it looks like we can, then we will lead the newly established, first of all, we'll help in the establishment of the company, and then we will lead them to the things that they need, and that is human capital, management expertise, financial capital, and physical facilities. As well as counseling, coaching, and so forth.
Well, I think that would be really challenging for a researcher, from the researcher's perspective, because you go into it to follow the science and not necessarily to become a business person.
I think that's an extremely good point. But, many universities around the world, and I think increasingly including this one, are developing what I call an enterprise culture, where grad students, not necessarily faculty, but grad students, come out of their time at the university imbued with a desire to go into commerce, to make a buck. And there's nothing wrong with making a buck. But in order to do that, I think there needs to be a culture in the institution where that's okay, where they can look around and they can see other faculty members driving Porsche, and they can see the dearly departed, people like the dearly departed Tony Nugent, who's had a fabulous career as a scientist and a fabulous career as an entrepreneur and made a lot of money in the process, and people admire that. And I think that if that culture increasingly develops within the university, then it's perfectly agreeable to pursue a career in commerce or an entrepreneurial career based on science, as it is for the pure pursuit of science.
What support are you getting for that then?
We're getting great support. Tech Edmonton is really in a very good position now. The university has has contributed significant resources to this venture, cash and of course facilities and in-kind contributions. City of Edmonton also has contributed several millions of dollars over the next few years to ensure that Tech Edmonton is successful. The province is in there with a major contribution. Western Diversification is in with a major contribution. So we're actually well-resourced, and we're using those resources to crank up the volume, as I like to put it, on the whole company creation activity.
You've got some ambitious plans. Where do you think you're going to be in a few years?
Well, Cheryl, if you don't mind, I'm just going to paraphrase the vision that our enterprise put together some months ago in a retreat. And this is what we think that things are going to be like by the year 2010. Tech Edmonton, by 2010, is going to have grown and thrived, so it's a go-to organization for anyone in the greater Edmonton region, and beyond for that matter, who has a drive and a desire to commercialize research-intensive innovation. We're going to have equity in portfolio companies. We anticipate that equity will be worth more than $100 million, which is, of course, retained for the benefit of the citizens of Greater Edmonton region. And we're going to own significant equity position in more than $300 million market cap companies. There's a lineup at the door of inventors, investors, and licensees, all of whom want to work with us to improve their prospects. We have a $20 million seed fund. It's fully invested. Second phase is about to be launched. Most of our portfolio companies are thriving, and we expect our first liquidity event in the coming year. We're located downtown in the prestigious Bay Building. It's tremendously successful. We occupy the top two floors, total of 150,000 square feet. Tenants are fully satisfied, happy, and grateful that they've managed to gain access to this prestigious place. We've graduated a dozen spin-off companies to commercial space in the last 2 years. That's our vision, Cheryl. That's where we think we're going to be in 2010. That's what drives us. That's what anchors us. And that's what we believe we can accomplish given the right circumstances.
2010's not very far away. I'll have to come back and see how you make out. Thank you very much, David.
Very welcome, Cheryl.
That was Dr. David Cox, CEO of Tech Edmonton. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Innovation and Science, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, Calgary Technologies, Inc., Alberta Gaming Research Institute, Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Science Alberta Foundation, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.